Welcome to Spirit in Action. My name is Mark Helpsmeet, and each week we bring you visits and conversations with people doing healing work for this world, hearing what they're doing and what inspires them and supports them in doing it. Welcome to Spirit in Action. Today for Spirit in Action, we have a very different topic to discuss. Usually I'm talking to a person or a group who are engaged in some specific world healing work. While today I'm going to be talking to John Bachman and Christina Yaka, former residents of Eau Claire, currently back for a short visit, who have been in Italy for 2 years, now their permanent home. In talking with John and Christina, I hope to enable us to have a clearer view of the strengths and weaknesses of the two different countries and to explore the possibilities for improving the world and ourselves by choosing a new home. They've both been very involved in world healing work, John as a criminal defense lawyer, including his legal work with NukeWatch, Earth First, and the Line 3 pipeline protesters, while Christina's artwork and teaching have been enrichment of the world. I previously interviewed John about his defense of the protesters at the 2008 Republican National Convention. Fortunately, I had production assistance from Andrew Jansen on today's show. Also, keep in mind that there is an uncut version of this program on northernspiritradio.org with an additional 8.5 minutes, mostly related to European Union differences and issues that you will likely find very interesting. Right now, we're sitting down on Myron Buckles' back porch for a visit about Italy and the U.S. with John Bachman and Christina Yaka. John, welcome to Spirit in Action again.
Well, thank you very much.
And Christina, this is the first time I get to visit with you for Spirit in Action. Welcome.
Thank you.
My understanding, John, is that you're just here for a couple weeks visiting from Italy, where you now live. Why did you choose come back to the USA? Aren't you all happy in Italy?
Oh, yes. We're quite happy there. We're quite acculturated to living in Italy. Sometimes I've gone to restaurants here, and I say, grazie molto bene. Thank you, it's very good, without thinking about it. We have a few loose ends to deal with here, but we're in Italy until Gabriel blows his horn. We're not moving back here. It's too cold, it's too expensive, and the coffee is terrible.
Okay. And Christina, what are your reasons?
I thought it was to take care of our loose ends, but it's turned out to be to visit with friends, and it's been very enjoyable to see so many people that we knew and still know and spend time with people. Being an expat has many advantages, but friendships are a bit different. They're, of course, not as long-lived, so you don't have a long history with people that you're starting to make friends with. And you might be friends with people that you wouldn't have been friends with in the United States, especially among the expat community. And it's easier to make deeper friendships when you're speaking English, but I'm trying to make deep friends with some Italians as well.
I'm assuming that retirement was one of the things that made this possible for you. Could you have made this transition when you were still working?
Some people do. I don't see how I would have. Retirement definitely makes it easier. Being a dual citizen has made it much easier. So anybody who plans to do this has to look into the legal ways to move to Italy. Many people think they can just do it, and you can't just do it. And having dual citizenship makes some things run smoother, but there's still a lot of bureaucracy that piano, piano. It gets done slowly, slowly.
Piano? Is that?
Piano, piano means slowly, slowly. Piano has many meanings, but often you hear piano, piano. And like, oh, my Italian's just not that good at yet. Piano, piano. We're going on a hike. Piano, piano.
And again, you have citizenship because your grandmother, your grandparents came
both
from Italy?
Both grandparents were born in Italy. My father was born before my grandfather became naturalized, so that made me eligible. That part of the law is changing right now. They're starting to say that when somebody becomes naturalized and they have minor children, the minor children lose their citizenship. So that law is just changing now, so it's very complicated.
I think I need to ask you about that because my sense is that there's a number of countries in Europe or in that area which those countries are becoming less favorable towards immigrants.
Yes. So technically, I was always an Italian. I didn't apply for citizenship. I applied to be recognized. And when I applied to be recognized at the consulate in Chicago, previously it was taking 5 months to be recognized. Mine took 13 months. During that 13 months, the law changed, and my husband now has to take a test, a language test, to become a citizen. Before that, he would have just been able to become a citizen without the language requirement. And that's about when Salvini had power in the government, and he was very anti-immigrant.
To some degree, it feels like the U.S. is becoming more and more anti-immigrant. Its whole rising of connections with Trump and some of the right wing in this country. Is there a similar movement in Italy?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, John could probably speak about it more clearly than I can.
There are now a lot of refugees fleeing conflict in Africa. A lot of them go to Libya, some to Tunisia, because to get to Lampedusa, which is the most southern island in Italy, it's not that far. It's a few hundred miles. But a lot of them don't make it, because the Mediterranean can be very rough. A lot of them drown, or the boat falls apart. The Italian government, under the present ruling coalition, has passed a number of laws to try to stem the number of refugees. One, there are groups that go out and they search for people in boats. They used to be able to get one group. If they saw another group, they could pick them up and bring them both back to port. Now they pick up one group. If they see another group, they're not allowed to pick them up. You have to dump off the first group and then go back out in the ocean. And there are, still are, people that fly private aircraft to patrol the ocean. They've now outlawed that flying from Sicily and Calabria. They have to fly much farther, so it's much more expensive, and they have to be in the air a lot longer time, so that limits the area that they can search. The Italian government recently made a deal with Albania that the people that get picked up now are sent to this camp in Albania to have their claims processed. They just sent the first boatload of people to Albania. They gave Albania a lot of money and built this camp there. So I don't know how that's going to work. Whether, if they're successful, do they get to live in Italy, which is an EU country? Albania isn't. Or do they have to stay in Albania? I don't know. And the present ruling coalition in parliament plays on the nativist anti-Muslim sentiments. I mean, most of the people coming are black. And from Africa, a lot of them are Muslims. There's the feeling that they're not Italian. They're diluting our traditions. It's not all that different than the anti-immigrant sentiment here. They want to set up mosques. They want to convert people to Islam. We can't have this.
That's what the Italians are saying.
A lot of them, yeah. The present prime minister, her party went from 2% to about 20%, partly based on anti-refugee sentiment. Part of it's racist. A lot of people fled the Ukraine. There's a lot of Ukrainians, but they didn't have a problem with the Ukrainians. Ukrainians are white. They have more money. A lot of them are Eastern Orthodox, which is in some ways not all that different than Catholicism. So the government, there's no problem with them.
Christina told me some of the reasons that she wanted to move there, or important parts for her. What about for you, John? What were your priorities in terms of leaving the U.S., moving to Italy?
Well, I'm married to Christina. I have to follow my wife.
Okay, well, that's what the way men should be. But
right. Now, I lived in China, Taiwan, Hong Kong for over 6 years. I'm used to living outside the United States. Our son lives in Japan. Our siblings are California, Florida, Pennsylvania. We have no family ties here. We're retired. We can go anywhere. It's much cheaper to live in Italy than it is here. Italy has a good public transportation system. we're on national health care, so we don't worry about doctor visits or bills. I broke my ankle. We had a $31 copay.
And you get Social Security, right?
Yeah.
So Social Security travels with you to your through your banks, whatever.
Well, our Social Security plus Christina's pension is more than the average salary of people that work in Italy. So we're pretty well off. And you figure that grocery prices are generally half of what you pay here.
Well, probably because you're getting it in season, not getting something shipped halfway around the world.
That's part of it. Farmers don't make as much money, and agriculture is heavily subsidized by the EU. Farmers get pretty heavy subsidies, which keeps down the price of food. And a lot of it's local, so it doesn't travel very far. That lowers the price, too. Coming here, I'm astonished at the price of food. I mean, you paid $4.99 for a loaf of bread. We would pay maybe $2 for.
I think you can get Wonder Bread for $2, yeah. Which I would never do, of course. But
right. Yeah, I go to the grocery store. If I spent $40, I couldn't carry it. There would be too much stuff.
The point, though, financially, it works out well for you
right.
being there. What about taxes? Does that matter? Social Security, you still pay U.S. Social Security? Do you pay European taxes? How does that all work?
We do have to pay taxes in both countries. And right now, we're trying to pay our Italian taxes. The deadline got extended, so we haven't finished, because we can take that against our U.S. taxes. And we could probably take the U.S. against the Italian, but if we overpaid the Italian, we'd never get the money back. So you don't get refunds.
Aren't their taxes pretty high?
Their taxes are high, but we moved to an area that has a flat 7% tax rate incentive for retirees who move to parts of southern Italy. We're the furthest north part of southern Italy. And to a town with less than 20,000 people. So they are trying to attract retirees to these places to help. So many of the small towns are just emptying out. And young people don't stick around because there aren't jobs. So, you know, unless they're entrepreneurs and trying to preserve something of the culture, something of the food culture or farming culture. So we try to support those things, but this flat tax won't last forever, but it's an incentive for right now. But I think it's going to turn out equal. We're not going to be double taxed, but if you get one subtracted from the other, you end up paying the same. It's not a big advantage.
The general tax rate is higher than here, but you also get a lot more. We're on national health care. The trains are heavily subsidized. To go to the nearest big city, we have 20 trains a day. We pay, it'd be about U.S. $2.50. The trains go 90 miles an hour. It's faster to take the train to the city than to drive there. The trains are generally on time. They're clean. They're efficient. Guns are not an issue. Guns are heavily regulated. You might have a mass shooting once every 10 years.
In all of Italy?
Yeah, right. You have to register your gun with the police, and, you know, there's no such things as semi-automatic or automatic weapons. And so that's not an issue. Abortion is a bit of an issue.
It's still illegal there?
No, it was legalized in 1978 against the wishes of the Catholic Church. A lot of doctors can opt out of doing it. So it's sometimes hard to access, although it's legal. There was recent legislation that says that anti-abortion activists are allowed to go into abortion clinics. I mean, they were generally always there anyway, and there was a lot of pressure.
So they're not just outside heckling you as you go in, they're inside the clinic?
Yeah, they're legally allowed to go inside the clinic. They were doing it anyway before that, but now it's a law. So, although it's legal, there's a lot of pressure not to have abortions.
I'm trying to get the overview, and we'll drill down on some of the details later on. So, for you, it is more affordable to be there.
And much more.
Notwithstanding the double taxation and everything else, your incentive to be there works really well. It's easy because Christina has Italian citizenship to start with, and John's working his way up to speak Italian and make it into the good graces there. If you don't learn Italian, does that mean you won't be accepted, John, as a citizen?
Right. I have to do that before I can do the application. But I'm on a 5-year residence visa right now. And if I didn't get it in 5 years, I could renew it. Renew it every 5 years. If you don't have residence and you're not an EU citizen, you can stay for 90 days. Then you have to go out for 90 days and then you can come back. We know some expats who do that. They're not citizens. They come on the 90-day visa, then they have to go away and then they come back. You can now get if you're not a citizen, you can't work in Italy. The unemployment is so high, particularly for young people, that they don't allow non-citizens to get a job. Although now they pass a digital nomad visa, where if you have certain online employment, you can live there as a citizen. You don't have to do the 90 days in, 90 days out. That's very new, and it's not clear how that's going to work.
Still, the overall picture is financially, it works really well for you as retired people receiving pension and Social Security. Right. And there's certain things that make it attractive to you. Healthcare, when you're of retirement age, healthcare becomes all the more important because you're not getting it through work here and all of that. Is it a good thing for people to leave the U.S.? One of the concerns I have is people who would vote the way that I would like people to vote are no longer in the country. You don't get to vote anymore here.
Yeah, we do.
You get to vote in U.S. elections?
Yeah, we voted absentee. We've done that.
You get to vote there, and you get to vote here.
Right.
Well, I had no idea that that was even a possibility.
Yeah, you voted twice.
Oh, no. This is going to go over the air, people listening to Spirit in Action, and now the Republicans are going to build up a big case that Christina is double voting. Oh, no.
I voted in the regional election in Italy, and I voted in the EU Parliament election. And I voted in the American election as a U.S. citizen. And our son can vote in the U.S. election, living in Japan, but he can't vote in the Japanese elections because he's not a citizen. He's married to a Japanese woman. He has the right to stay there, but he doesn't want to give up his U.S. citizenship. So he works there, he pays taxes there, but he can't vote there.
We should be clear about that. You have dual citizenship.
Right.
When John becomes an Italian citizen, will he have dual citizenship also?
Right. And then he can vote.
Okay. So why is it just a law of Japan?
Right. You're only allowed one citizenship. So our grandchildren have American and Japanese citizenship. Our son is working on the Italian citizenship, but when they turn 18, they have to choose either to keep the Japanese citizenship and drop the others, or keep the other two and drop the Japanese.
I think I'm confused. And what I'm really wondering about is what makes the world a better place. So leaving the U.S. feels like it's in a very troubled place right now. You still get to vote, but you're not here working on things the way that many of us still are. What do you think about this idea of moving to another country because the grass is greener on the other side of the Mediterranean?
Don't make me feel guilty.
Well,
I have a good life.
Well, of course, that's a question. Yeah. Many people say, "I've got mine, Jack. Who cares?"
But
I'm not trying to make you feel guilty. I am trying to lift up whatever is best for this world.
Yeah. But we do have a wider world view by living in two places. I mean, we could share all of our views about having universal health care and not having to pay for a Social Security supplement, which is still very much controlled by companies, by corporate interests.
Corporate greed, let's put it clear.
Very good. And, I mean, maybe it's not a perfect system, but it works.
Italy has its own issues that you wouldn't see as a tourist. For example, the nuclear industry was shut down in 1992 by a referendum. 94% of people voted against nuclear power after Chernobyl. And there was another referendum, I think in 2012, which they quashed, bringing it back by, again, over 90%. But now the present government has put restrictions on solar power. There's a lot more solar power than there is here. But they want to bring back nuclear energy. There was a local fight over oil drilling in the Adriatic. You can see some oil rigs out there. But they wanted to sell a bunch of other leases. So there were demonstrations locally against new oil leases. Where we live, it's a tourist area. If they had an oil spill, the beaches would be fouled and the economy would take a huge nosedive. There was also local resistance to selling a nature reserve. There's a nature reserve 10 miles away. It's over 4,000 acres. Part of its shoreline, a lot of the shoreline is given over to commercial interests. There's some endangered species there, shorebirds. It's a migratory area. The provincial legislature voted at 2 in the morning without notice to give this to a developer. They tried to sell it before to some oil baron, but the oil baron didn't want to pay for dredging for his yacht. But anyway, there was a fight.
That deal fell through.
Yeah, I know. It's hard when you have a big boat.
But I think that the overall, what you're saying, though, John, is that environmental stuff can be iffy. There are stuff that we feel somewhat more secure of in the United States at this point so far, that's still iffy. That can come and go as a possibility in Italy. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. There was also resistance to a pipeline through the mountains. The percentage of people in labor unions is much higher than it is here. And generally, the labor unions are much more militant. It seems like they have a train strike every week. They usually settle before the strike actually happens. In the north, Parma, Firenze, Florence, Bologna is called the Red Belt. The Communist Party has been in control of the city council and the mayor of Bologna since 1948. And in parliament, the main group in opposition is the Social Democrats. They're like Bernie Sanders. But you also have socialist communists, some outright fascists. You can probably find something you like, some party to join. And like here, if you don't like the Democrats or the Republicans, you're out of the cult. So, yeah, bureaucracy can be maddening and sort of opaque sometimes, but you don't have to deal with them that much. But locally, youth unemployment is very high, somewhere around 30%.
What's a youth?
Anybody under 30. Why do you want to move here? You know, because they don't see any hope for them. They go to northern Italy or another country just to make ends meet. There's no minimum wage. The birth rate is very low and falling. The number of deaths is actually twice the number of births.
So if it wasn't for immigration, population would be falling significantly.
Yes, in Abruzzo. But that's generally true of most of southern Italy. There's a great economic divide between the south and the north. The north is very prosperous. The south, there's not a lot of industry. A lot of people don't want to go into farming. It's very hard. The mafias moved into farming in some places. It's a very hardscrabble life. The labor force participation for women is below 50%.
It's more traditional, what used to be in the United States.
Yes, and there's not a lot of support for women who go to work. It's very hard to get childcare, and it's usually awful. Grandma doesn't live with everybody.
But wait a minute, what's family size there? You're talking about low birth rate. I'm just thinking that you're not having a typical big Catholic family like what I grew up in. I grew up in a family with 12 kids.
No.
and few people did that anyhow. But three kids, is that a typical family or is it one?
One or two. A lot of people can't afford more than that number of children. People are getting married later than they used to. Extended families, there's a lot of those. your cousins, your uncles, you know, mom had 13 children. Holidays, you see them, you know, you go in the restaurant and there's a table with 25 people. But the younger generation, 3 or 4 would be a big family.
It's rather like the U.S. at this point. That transition's been made, but there's economic factors playing, it sounds like, in southern Italy that make it even more difficult.
Yeah. Housing, for us, it's very cheap. But for Italians, they're making a lot less money. So buying a house is very expensive. A lot of people live at home until they're in their 30s because they can't afford to move out. Living with your parents until you're 35 is not unusual.
So that's very different than the situation that John Bachman and Christina Jacca are experiencing coming in with their own income. It's a very different experience. And we have them here today for Spirit in Action to talk about their experience in Italy. I also want to talk some more with John Bachman about his history as a lawyer here, particularly a criminal defense lawyer in the United States, and what that means when you're over in Italy. Do you become persona non grata, I guess, because you can't work anyhow, right? We'll talk about those issues and questions as we speak with John and Christina for Spirit in Action today. And just so you remember, folks, you find our programs via our website, northernspiritradio.org. On our site, you can find all of our interviews of the past 19 years, including previously when I've spoken with John Bachman. That'll be linked from this show. Christina, this is her first time on Northern Spirit Radio, but I also want to delve into a little bit of the work that she's done in the world, mainly in the field of art. We'll move to that shortly. I do want to remind folks, come to the website, northernspiritradio.org. Give us feedback, give us direction where we should be going, suggest to us future people we should be interviewing. There's also a place where you can donate to Northern Spirit Radio, especially important right now. I haven't got money to go through the next 2 months. It just happens to be that contributions this year have fallen from the previous 4 years. So we need your help just to get to our major fundraising, which happens at the end of November. Please help us out when you visit, and please support community radio stations. I want to ask both Christina and John about media over in Italy as well. Radio stations are changing now in the United States because so much of what we do is online, but we still have 35 plus stations carrying the Northern Spirit Radio programs across the United States. And they bring you a slice of music and local information, news, talent that you get nowhere else. So please support your local community radio station and help them thrive in this changing world. Again, John Bachman's here, Christina Jacca's here. We're speaking about their transition moving from the United States, Eau Claire, Wisconsin, over to Italy. And let's delve into some more of that right away. The overall question I want to ask you both, John and Christina, is it good for the world? And I've had this question even within the United States. I'm fortunate in that our children and grandchildren, our 5 sons, have all chosen to settle within 3 hours' drive from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. That's very different than if one was out in Seattle and one's down in Texas and one's over in North Carolina. So I think that there's definitely something wonderful about being part of a community, having strong roots, being concerned about where you live. I lived for 2 years in Africa when I was in the Peace Corps, and I do feel like a citizen of the world myself. So I recognize some strengths on that side as well. What do you think are the pros and cons of moving to another country, as you have done?
Well, yeah, we have not been part of this community that we live in now for more than 2 years, me a little more than 2 years. But making connections has been an important part of living there. John mentioned some of the movements where people have made it possible to maintain a natural area. So we've been able to write letters about that, take part in a few protests here and there.
Are you saying you can act as a protester in Italy and you don't have to fear getting beaten up by the police?
Right. No fear. But also we could still be working on some of the issues, the bigger issues that we were concerned with in America, like environmentalism. We don't have to give up every part of our personality, every part of our past, but on the other hand, people don't know our past. So it's humbling. We're not recognized as experts in things because our Italian is not as good as native Italians. So there's a lot of humbleness to starting over in a new culture and a new language. And sometimes it's difficult. I know there was one other thing. There's actually a woman who's living in America. She's a professor. She has ties to Abruzzo. Yeah, so she has dual citizenship. And she has done a lot of work. She's one that really led the movement to stop more oil drilling in the Adriatic there. We can read her letters and try to follow her advice on some things because she's very trusted. But there was an issue of possibly drilling, and I think it's somebody from Colorado who wants to drill near Lake Bomba. Lake Bomba is inland, and it would probably be fracking, so something very difficult and very risky in an area that has earthquakes, and it could pollute the lake and pollute the area. But to protest, it was very hard. You had to do something before you could write. You had to get into a government site, and I found it very hard to manipulate through all of that. So it's a learning process. So the disadvantages are we're not as effective as if we stayed here.
What are your perspectives, John?
Christina is right. It's harder to participate in social movements because, well, when you're a foreigner, you don't know the background. You don't know the cultural nuances. But if you want to get involved in action, social action, yes, you can certainly do that. It's just a few more barriers to go through. But as I said, there's an active anti-nuclear, anti-oil activities. It's a very patriarchal culture, but there's also a very active feminist movement. International Women's Day. They had huge demonstrations in Bologna, Firenze, Parma, Modena.
And those are all northern Italy.
Northern Italy, there were some in Rome. There's a lot of resistance to patriarchy, but...
but it's still got a grip, huh?
Well, the present ruling coalition in Parliament is promoting traditional family values. They put up a lot of resistance to... They passed some laws recently against gay people adopting or being surrogate parents. The prime minister, she's about 48. She's never married. She has a child about 14. She had a boyfriend for a long time, and they found out he was sexually harassing his staff. He's got a TV program, a national TV program. She dumped him very quickly. He got suspended by the TV station for 3 days. He's back on the air now. They tell him to go home and think about it. And he's back. But she didn't want to talk about sexual harassment or any particular problems that women had. You know, that's my private thing. I'm not going to talk about it. She didn't take the step to generalize it to other Italian women or say, look, I empathize with you. You know, I went through the things that a lot of you go through. She didn't do that. She didn't make that leap. So there are active gay liberation movements, and although it's a very patriarchal culture, it's pretty tolerated. Locally, on Pride Day, they'll have demonstrations. It's very active in the north. It's more accepted in Milano, Venezia, Bologna, that area, than it is where we are. Where we are, it's a more traditional culture. The Catholic Church is stronger where we live in the south than it is in the north. Something like 97% of the people are at least nominally Catholic. There's a lot of churches everywhere.
You don't say that with delight in your voice.
Well, you know, I was always skeptical of the Catholic Church, but to go there and see some of the sculptures and the iconography that they have in the churches, I've become convinced that the Catholic Church is a death cult. All these gruesome crucifixion pictures or paintings and sculptures. There was one church we went in Rome where they had a pope in a crystal box. He died 500 years ago. It was all shriveled up, and it was awful. No. Pope Francis is, for the Catholic Church, he's relatively progressive. But on some issues, particularly with women and gay people, he's really not that different than previous popes. He said that gay people can be blessed, but they should change. They shouldn't be gay anymore. So there's those tensions. Things you wouldn't see or notice as a tourist. I don't like to go in Catholic churches anymore. You go into these churches, and they're huge, and they have all this artwork. And I think, where did they get the money to build all this stuff? They extracted money from the peasants for hundreds of years to build these elaborate structures to squeeze the peasantry, to squeeze the little wealth they had for this stuff, and then sold them pie in the sky. We went in the Uffizi Gallery in Florence, and it's picture after picture of Mary and Jesus bleeding all over the place, and couldn't you paint anything else for 300 years? I mean, you know, the Catholic...
I have to get Christina's input on this. I partly want your input, Christina, because amongst other things, you were an elementary school art teacher. You taught at the university here in art. So I'm just thinking you're in your happy place being around all this art. And John, as a lawyer, is much less impressed.
Yeah, no, I look at it more through art history and appreciate some of it. Yeah, there's some gruesome images. But I've learned that a lot of the gruesome images in the churches, all the people being tortured and dying naked and in rivers and going downstream dead or half dead, those are from the plague. After the plague, people had a lot of imagery like that happening. I don't know, pope in a glass? I don't know, but I enjoy looking at the art. I mean, there's always a dead Jesus in a glass because Good Friday they'll carry him out and proceed around town. And Mary will be behind him with other people carrying Mary dressed in black because it's Good Friday. And there's these wonderful processions. Some towns really interesting. We have to go to Chieti sometime. That's got the biggest one in our area. And there will be people that will look like their Ku Klux Klan in white hooded things. So it's hard not to think of the Ku Klux Klan, but the reasoning is similar in a way. Everybody's equal. We don't know who's who because we're all equal if we're all in this same hooded costume. But it's not because you want to hide your identity because you're going to be murderous to black people in America, but it's to be humble, and the rich person isn't better than the poor person. So it's a better reason anyway.
I'm curious about one thing, and partly I'm just learning about Italy here, and hopefully our listeners for Spirit in Action are getting an idea of how political movements exist in the U.S. and our values, how they compare to those in other countries, including those of the European Union. So one of the perspectives I imagine is true is Europe has in some ways become less religious more quickly than the U.S. has. In the U.S., there's a very strong evangelical Christian movement, which I think is not duplicated in European countries. I've traveled a fair amount in France, and it seems like 90% of the people describe themselves as catholique non pratiquant, which is non-practicing Catholic. You may have been baptized, nominally you'll get married in the church, but you'll never go to church, that kind of thing. And I think that probably Italy has its counterpart to that. What's your perspective about what religion means in Italy?
It seems that people that I've met that have lived there a long time do end up going to church. The people that I've met that married an Italian and had children, so then it becomes a part of their life. And one of them is very religious, another one not so much. But the only other religion in our area is Jehovah's Witnesses. And you see them around trying to promote that and attract new followers, just like here. But I think there's a center nearby in the next town in Roseto. And so they kind of spread out from there. There's one Methodist church that it's not functioning. There's a UU presence, but it's only online. I don't know of any other Protestant churches in our region. It's hard to find other religions.
Besides?
Be Catholic, yeah.
Do you have any more input on that, John?
The population in Italy is nominally about 97% Catholic. There are areas where Catholicism came much later, particularly in our province, since it was so isolated. They kept some of the pagan traditions and wove them into Catholicism. One town we can think of in particular has a snake festival every year. They go out and they collect a lot of live snakes. They have a big statue of St. Dominic wrapped with all these live snakes. And people join the procession. They have snakes around their necks. That was originally a pagan thing, but now it's been mixed up with Catholicism.
I thought it was just all the snakes that Patrick drove out of Ireland and they came to Italy instead.
That might be the case, yeah. I don't know. There's lots of religious festivals, but they're more like, let's have a big feast. We'll get the carnival rides to come to town. And we'll have bands. There was one just down the street from us this summer. They had rock bands and they had the Ferris wheel and raising money for the local church, food trucks, pork sandwiches, that's a big thing, hamburgers and french fries and hot dogs. You can get french fry and hot dog pizza, that's a big thing. Where we live, there's a lot of lamb dishes. 150 years ago, half the economy was based on wool. Christina's grandfather was a shepherd at one time. They'd take the sheep 150 miles south for the winter and then bring them back in the summer into the high pastures. Christina actually did that for a few days. The men were gone 9 months a year. Because the men were gone so long, some of the local towns were ruled by women for hundreds of years. The guys are gone, you know, we've got to run this town. They took over. One place in particular, very strong. Most of the people that go to church they're over 60.
So what about the ages of those involved in religion? In the U.S., my sense is that young people are less religious than older people.
Yes, that's true. The Italian Constitution has nothing to do with religion. The Italian Constitution is much more progressive than the U.S., guaranteeing women's rights, workers' rights, farmers' rights, rights to handicrafts, rights to free public education through college, national health care, a whole bunch of things that the U.S. Constitution doesn't have.
But not religion.
No, it was specifically said it was a secular country.
If I walk past the church on Sunday morning that's very close to our house, I will see older women, older than me, I'm old, older than me walking out together. I'll see very few other ages. The church that's downtown, I might see a more variety of ages, definitely Easter, it's packed.
So for the big holidays.
Right, but then again, they have all these little, even littler events at the churches, and there will be families. They might have the children dancing from one dance school, and all these families are there, and it's right there in the churchyard. So people are connected in ways, but not necessarily going to church very often. The bells ring. Oh, there was a point I was going to make, though. Despite what John has just said, every school has crucifixes. And even Natalia Greenberg, who was a writer and she was in the parliament for quite a time, she even wrote that she thought that it was good to have these pictures of Jesus in the schools to remind people of humanity somehow. I mean, she's a very liberal person. Her first husband was murdered because of his beliefs, and they were Jewish, and they hid out in the hills of Abruzzo for a while during World War II. And when he left Abruzzo and went to Rome, I think, he got captured and tortured. So she's very liberal, but she still, in some sense, wrote that this was okay. I'll have to read the whole article by her.
So there's many things we could talk about. I want to finish this visit for Spirit in Action with just a little bit more about the two of you. John, I've interviewed you before when the Republican National Convention 8, you were one of the lawyers representing some of the anarchists and activists who were protesting against the Republicans' presence in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. That's just one area where your legal knowledge and efforts have been applied. Could you mention just a few of the others? I just want an overview of the kind of work that made you feel like you were doing a valuable thing as a lawyer.
Many times I represented anti-nuclear activists, anti-atomic energy, atomic bombs. I did that for a long time. I represented critical mass. At one time, I represented some people from Earth First who were resisting mining at Mole Lake around Crandon. Also, some people who were arrested in Wisconsin protesting the tar sands oil, mine 3, near the terminus, the Coke refinery in Superior. The most enjoyable thing was representing anti-nuclear people. They have their act together. They have a very long campaign. They're willing to get arrested, go to prison. They have a well-organized fundraising and publicity campaign. They're very bright people. Some of the groups I represented were very disorganized. They did the right thing, but they didn't follow up. But a lot of these people, no one else would step up and do anything for them. And although tactically I disagree with some of the things they did, their hearts were in the right place. They were bringing up issues and putting themselves out there when no one else would do it. I certainly wasn't doing it for the money. Because
a lot of times, I didn't hear the talk about your pension.
Yeah. The paid criminal defense money that I got, in my mind, was a subsidy for doing these other things. You know, okay, I don't like to do this sometimes, but you know, that gives me the money to represent people for nothing. People that wouldn't otherwise have any legal help, being thrown into the legal system without help can be enormously scary. And you don't know the ins and outs, but at the same time, I wanted to give people their autonomy and their own voice. A lot of times I said to people, I helped you. You represent yourself, but I'll be here as backup. It's better to have you speak in court from your own heart. It's much more effective. I can do it for you, but...
So when you were doing criminal defense, you encouraged your clients. I thought all the top-level lawyers were, I'm going to control every word and I don't want you to speak. I want you to sit there and be pretty.
In ordinary criminal defense... Yes, I'm going to take over and I'm going to do this. And I'll do the best I can to save your butt. But protesters are very different.
There you want to be raising their voices.
Protesters, they have a cause. Ordinary criminal defendants, you know, I robbed a house, I stole a car. That's very different than somebody who breaks into a nuclear facility and sits on a bunker that has atomic bombs in it. Protesters are generally not out for themselves. They're generally always nonviolent.
Why did you become a lawyer?
Well, at the base level, I needed a job. I wanted to represent people in social movements. My personal activism goes back all the way to high school. I was a draft card burner. Yeah, I told my draft board, look, you can try to draft me, but I'm not going. I'll go to prison. It never happened. But fine, I'll sit here for 2 years. I'm not going to commit genocide in Vietnam. I've been in various activist groups for over 50 years. I've been in a lot of protests.
So that informed your going into the legal field because you wanted to be able to support that kind of thing too.
Correct, yeah, and make a living.
And Christina, your work was as an art teacher and maybe a producer of art also. I really don't know about this. Why that? What have you brought to the world through that work? And which part are you happiest with that you brought through your work with art?
Before I came to Wisconsin, I did some large outdoor eco art pieces. I did a very big one in a park in Philadelphia that got me notarized. It got in different art newspapers, magazines, and that helped me get the job here. So that brought me to Eau Claire to work at the university. Oh. That's part that I'm very proud of, because while I was at the university, I got several grants, and I was able to do big pieces and hire students to come with me to make these pieces out in the country, out in the Wood River area. That took, I don't know how many weeks, and how many students, and how many different sandwiches I made for students. But it always brought together a community of people that helped me make these bigger pieces. And so the community building, and my pieces were always about structure. And I would think about how we need to change the structures in our society to make a better society. And eventually the last piece I made was for an Eau Claire's arts festival, indie arts festival, music festival. And a lot of people helped me with that piece. So that was a nice bringing together of people to make an artwork.
So before you came to Wisconsin, you were teaching elementary school art, is that true?
Yeah, I taught elementary school art, and then I escaped. I escaped Johnstown, Pennsylvania, Winburn, Pennsylvania, which was in very bad shape. We had had a big flood that wiped out the steel mill, which would have gone under anyway. It was when steel mills were facing rough times. The economy was 25% unemployment. So it was very depressing. So I left and went to Seattle, and then I got into grad school. So I had a little bit of break between the elementary art teaching and the university teaching.
And you taught here at university for what, 7 or 8 years?
Right.
And then after that?
After that, I had a bit of a break where I was trying odd jobs and substitute teaching. And I actually went and got another degree. I thought I'd never teach again. So I got another degree in mental health counseling, and that's a very hard degree to get a job in. I was a great student, but I kept substituting and eventually got another job in the school district. I was very fortunate that a principal would hire me with all of my education and experience and the pay they would have to give me. And the pay scales are different right now, and people seem to be, even as teachers, negotiating their own pay. Anyway, it was very beneficial to me to have all those degrees for my pay.
And let me just be clear about one more thing. I heard overlapping values for both of you about environmental concerns. Is that something that unites you? I mean, John, you certainly worked a lot for people like Critical Mass, Nuke Watch, Earth First. Christina, I heard that your art, I think, beautified and brought people connection to the earth.
Right, yeah. Well, I tried to make things out of natural materials, out of sticks, stones, clay, fiber.
Well, I so appreciate that during your visit for a couple weeks here in Wisconsin, that you came back to this place where you lived for quite a while, and that you gave some of that time to me and my listeners for Spirit in Action. Thanks so much for giving us a glimpse of Italy, giving us a glimpse of a life lived differently, and for joining me today for Spirit in Action.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
So, folks, again, I have links connected with Italy and John Bachman and Christina Iacca's life there, their transition from the U.S. to Italy, on northernspiritradio.org. See you next week for Spirit in Action. The theme music for this program is Turning of the World, performed by Sarah Thompson. Check out all things Spirit in Action on northernspiritradio.org. Guests, links, stations, and a place for your feedback, suggestions, and support. Thanks for listening. I'm Mark Helpsmeet, and I hope you find deep roots to support you to grow steadily toward the light. This is Spirit in Action.
With every voice. with every song, we will move this world along, and our lives will feel the echo.